Well, good morning, everybody. Left some outlines laying around. I trust that you'll get one and follow along. We're going to be in Psalm chapter 50 this morning. Psalm chapter 50. Entitled the message, A Judge Like No Other. You'll see at the beginning of the psalm, the heading, the Psalm of Asaph. This is a fairly common name in connection with the psalms. This is the first time, of the first 50 psalms, the first time, I believe, that you would have seen this heading in the psalms. It's chapter 50. You'll also see it chapter 73 through 83 as well. Before we begin and look at our text, I want to talk about some universal principles of judgment. We're going to be talking about judgment this morning. And here are some things that are, I call them universal in the sense that everybody understands them. Everybody embraces them. They may not be that conscious in the forefront of your mind, but as we talk about them just for a minute, I think you will see what I'm talking about. The first one, principle, is this, that all of creation is subject to judgment by God, the Creator. All of creation, since God is the Creator, all of the things that He created belong to Him and are under His authority. All of creation is subject to God's judgment. Everybody knows that. Now you may say, well, there's an atheist here and there that don't. No, there's not. We saw that in Romans chapter 1. Everyone understands some things about God, and that's one of them. They know there is a God. They know His eternal power and Godhead. We saw in Romans chapter 1. So that's the first thing. All of creation is subject to God's judgment. The second one is this, that judgment begins at home. Judgment begins at home. Let me explain what I mean by that. Let's suppose that I go to someone who is overweight. And I said, you know, I rebuked it. I said, you know, you ought not to eat so much. You ought to watch your diet. You ought to be careful about what you're eating. You ought to have some discipline in your life in regard to your weight. What is that person going to think in about 5 seconds of me starting along those lines? Okay? Here are some things. Have you ever looked in the mirror, John? Or, that's like the pot calling the kettle black, right? All right, we think those things, okay? You didn't have to have anybody point that out to you. It just came to you just immediately. That if before I rebuke someone about a particular fault, I might ought to look at myself. All right, that's a universal response to that kind of thing. Let me give you another example that has the same principle but a little different aspect. Suppose that all of us who have kids, and that your kids may be grown or they may be little, but let's even the field, let's go with all of our kids were 8 years old. All a bunch of 8-year-old kids. They're out running around playing downtown. There's an old vacant 2-story building that's been vacant for years. And these kids are all in the alley behind there with rocks, throwing them up and breaking the windows. Say, no,
in that situation, the first person or kid I would have yelled at would have been hurt. My own. I'll deal with my own kids. I expect more from my own kids than I do yours. The judgment begins at home. That's the idea. That principle is universally understood.
made a covenant with me by sacrifice. Let the heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Selah. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, and I will testify against you. I am God, your God. I will not rebuke you for your sacrifices or your burnt offerings, which are continually before me. I will not take a bull from your house, nor goats out of your folds. For every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle on a thousand hills. I know all the birds of the mountains, and the wild beasts of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you.
made a covenant with me by sacrifice. If the heavens declare his righteousness, then God himself is judge. So here we see the judge, God the judge, summoning all of the earth that he deals with his people, his people, to begin with. Number two, some legal judgment term. Community service found in two places. Community service, where you probably all of you are familiar with community service. Community service is where someone who has committed a crime has to pay for the crime rather than going and sitting in jail. They are required to do what they call community service. Something that is for the benefit of the community rather than ever. who confronted me with things, he didn't really know I did it. And yet I knew he knew I did it. It was as useless to lie to him. It only compounded my error. But there is this sense in my mind that he didn't know. And just that little chance compelled me to cry. God is not like my Father. God knows. God can testify against me, and his testimony and his witness is 100%. What if I want a plea bargain with God? You ever tried that? Or maybe I'll tell God I'll do some community service. Is God impressed with community service in you? See what he says. I will not rebuke you for your sacrifices or your burnt offerings which are continually before me. I will not take a bull from your house, nor goats from your folds. God doesn't need your bulls. God doesn't need your goats. God doesn't need your sacrifices. God doesn't need your church attendance. God doesn't need you to come on Easter. For all the bulls and the goats belong to me, he said. Let me give you an illustration of this. This may be a poor illustration, I don't know. But let's take law. We're talking about judgment, God's judgment. Let's talk about law. Because that's what brings judgment, isn't it? The breaking of the law. Let's talk about one law. The speed limit. 55 miles an hour. All of us have some relation to keeping that law. All of us have some idea and some regard or disregard for that law. Now, I'm going to make it simple. I'll break it down to three types of people. First of all, there's the person who says this. If 55 is the speed limit, 45 is better. So they drive well under the speed limit. And so they're on the road and they're happily keeping the speed limit and obeying the law. And at the same time, they're making sure that 15 other people piled up behind them are as well. All right? That's the first type. The second type of person, and that the first type, you know, that's probably 5 out of 100 people, maybe. The second type of person is the vast majority of people. 70 or 80 out of 100, I don't know, I'm just guessing at the numbers, will fall into the second group. The speed limit is 55, and they've got some common sense. Do you have common sense? I've got common sense, I think. And I know I'm going down the Kennedy straight stretch between here and Quitman, and it's straight, and it's good road. And if I'm legally can do 55, if I do 56, am I suddenly going to wreck and cause somebody harm because I went 1 mile an hour over? No. If 55 is safe, so is 56. If 56 is safe, what about 57? Yes. And we know that I don't want to say laws are made to be broken, but we know that you've got to use a little common sense here. And we know that the policeman is probably not going to give me a ticket for going 58 in a 55. If I pass a state trooper and I'm going 58 and the speed limit is 55, I doubt if he's going to even notice. He may have his radar on, it may say 58, and he's probably just going to go on. And I'm going to go on. I'll slow down. I'll let him see my brake lights, so I'll know that I'm paying attention to him. He's there.
But I'm not that concerned about being rigidly going 55. I may go 58, 59, 60. Lots of people are in that group. And then there's the third group. This third group are wannabe NASCAR drivers. All right? They know the speed limit's 55, but here's what they're thinking. The state trooper will only give you a ticket if you're going 10 miles an hour over. So for them, really, the speed limit is 65. All right, so they're going down the Kenny Straight Stretch, and they're going 65. They meet a state trooper coming this way, and they see him. They hit their brakes, and they slow down. And he's sitting on the side of the road. As they pass by him, they wave at him, let him make sure he sees their taillights, give him a thumbs up, say, good job, state trooper, see how I slowed down? Everything's cool. Now suppose that someone, one of these people, are going through, let's say, Guy, small town, and you go through Guy, and there's a school there. And there's a speed limit there. And there's a cop or two there. I don't remember what the speed limit is. Let's say it's 30. And the school zone is 30. There's double yellow lines. And this one of these guys, probably the third guy, is going through Guy, the town of Guy. And he sees the 30-mile-an-hour speed zone. So how fast is he going? 40. Maybe not quite 40, maybe a little bit less because it's a small town and has a reputation and there's a school there. So he's going 30 or 35, a little over, certainly over 30. He has to go over the speed limit some. So he's going through there, and all of a sudden, some, I won't say 90-year-old man, surely there's any 90-year-old men in here. Somebody pulls out on the road. Took some forever to get out there, and by the time he gets there, he's having to put on his brakes to stop, and they're going 15 miles an hour. Double yellow line, in a school zone, no kids in sight. 15 miles an hour. What does our guy do? He zips around him real quick, gets up to 40 or 45, and he's planning on slowing back down, and about the time he reaches that maximum speed, he looks over and there's the guy, policeman, sitting there. So what does he do? He shuts her down. You know, he gets back in his lane, shuts her down. He sets up straight. He puts his bag of potato chips out of the way so it doesn't look like he's been eating on them. Gets his Coke out of the way, his phone out of reach. He does all these things. He has his hands at, what is it, 2 and 1 or 11 and 2 or something. He's looking right, trying to look just perfect, because these blue lights are coming up behind him. He sees the blue lights. He just has a feeling there for him. He's going to turn on the side road. He puts on his blinker 100 foot before the intersection, turns in there, and sure enough, the guy follows him, so he stops. He's doing everything he can to bargain with the state trooper. He's driving like a model citizen. But he gets stopped anyway. When the state trooper or the city cop comes to his window, he does everything he can to explain away his behavior. The guy was going real slow. I was about to hit him. I had to go around him, this and that, this and that. The policeman is not impressed. This is a school zone. Double yellow line. He does everything he can to make the policeman to satisfy this judgment. But it doesn't work. Have you ever done God that way? Have you ever done God that way? A lot of chaos going on in my house. God, I'll do better. I'll do this, I'll do that, if you'll just let things calm down. God says in these verses, I'll not take a bull from your house. I'm not interested in a goat from your fold. I'm not interested in sacrifices from you. I'm not interested if you make sure you go to church every Sunday. I'm not impressed. You can't undo broken law that easy. In fact, you can't undo sin at all. Do you hear that? You can't unsin. It doesn't happen. You can't undo it. The law has been broken. God tells them in these verses, His people, I'm not interested in your beast, in your goats, in your bulls. For every beast of the forest is already mine. The cattle on 1,000 hills belong to me. Will you pay me with another one? If I were hungry, if I did have a need, God says, if I did have a need, if I were hungry, I wouldn't come to you and ask you to meet my need. I am God, your God. The world is mine and all of its fullness. You cannot meet my needs. Especially trying to atone for your errors. Especially trying to undo your sin. Judgment, this psalm, is beginning first at God's house with God's people. It's a reminder to you and to me, that when we sin, we're not going to get out of it by bargaining with God. Our sin will not be atoned for. Our account will not be settled with God by bargaining, by doing something for Him, and Him doing something for us. God doesn't. First of all, God doesn't need your something. He doesn't. He already owns you. So He owns everything you have. But secondly, you can't satisfy the judgment against sin that easily. In fact, you know, and I know, because throughout the whole Scripture, you can never, there is nothing you can do to atone for your wrong. Nothing. Let's go on to number 3. Number 3 begins in verse 16, where, and here's the points, mistrials, not guilty pleas, and violations of rights. What is a mistrial? From my limited definitions, I guess, as far as them being accurate, I would say a mistrial is something that has happened, some type of technicality that has happened that has made it unable and unlikely that a guilty person would receive a fair trial. So a mistrial is declared, and they, I assume, start over at some point. A not guilty plea. When someone is arrested and they're summoned to court, subpoena is given to them, and they come to court, they've been charged with a crime. And the judge asks, How do you plead? And they either say guilty or not guilty, or perhaps there's other ways you could plead. But let's look at these two. Guilty, you're admitting you did it. Not, you can plead not guilty. Okay, if you plead not guilty, does that mean you are not guilty? No. No, a person can very likely, in fact, they may be, statistically, they may be likely, very likely to be guilty, but they plead not guilty. Now, if that's the case, first of all, they've lied, right? They said, I'm not guilty. Why would they do that? Because it's not up to them to prove their innocence. It is up to the prosecutor to prove their guilt. So if I'm guilty, you've got to prove it. That's the idea. Again, our little court analogies fall short because this God, this judge, is not your average judge. He's a judge like no other. He doesn't care if you plead guilty or not guilty as far as him knowing the facts. He already knows them. Violation of rights. I get worked up over rights. People thinking they have rights that they don't have. Look in verse 16. The first word of verse 16 says, but to the wicked God says. Now this kind of gives you an indication that something a little different here. God's called his saints before him and told them, I don't want your offerings, I don't want your bulls, I don't want your goats, you have nothing to offer me. I know I'm a witness to your sin. But to the wicked, those who are not his people, those who are not his saints, God says. And this gives us an indication, something a little different just from the use of the word but. But to the wicked, God says. What does God say to the wicked? He asks them some questions. First question is, what right have you to declare my statutes or to take my covenant in your mouth? People have the tendency to think they have rights, to assume rights that are not theirs to assume. People think they have the right to this, and the right to that, and they don't. Do my sons have a right to my inheritance? No. If I die without a will, the state will give them that, bestow upon them that right. But until then, I can give it to whoever I want to, can I? They have no right to it. It is mine. Lots of people think they have rights, that they can get this, they can get that, and do all these things. God asks them that question, what right do you have in taking my name? What right do you have to assume for yourself that you can declare what my statutes are? You can declare what the law is. You can declare and assume that you are involved in my covenant. What gives you that right? From what I've seen, he says, you have hated instruction. You've cast my words behind you. You're a sinner, a wicked sinner who wants nothing to do with me unless it's to your benefit. He names their sins. This is not an exhaustive list, I'm sure. When you saw a thief, you consented with him. You've been a partaker with adulterers. So you're a thief. You're an adulterer. You've given your mouth to evil. Your tongue frames deceits. You're a liar. You sit and speak against your brother. He describes brother a little different way. Your mother's own son. that be your brother? All right, you have to think about that a minute. All right, your mother's own son, that's my brother. I speak against my brother. I try to harm my brother. God goes on and says, these things you have done, and I kept silent. Now, this is interesting. These verses are not given to us to teach us how to parent. Because here is a statement I want to give you. Judgment delayed is not a pardon. You ever sinned in some way and nothing happened? We all have. All right? We sin and then we don't get caught. Well, that's nice, isn't it? God says here, these things you have done and I kept silent. And you thought I was altogether like you. In other words, you thought I was okay with that. No. Not the case. Let me tell you a little example. None of these people are here, so it wouldn't matter, but I'm not going to name names just to not embarrass the guilty, all right? But in our family, mine and my wife's family, there was this situation where a parent was at a gathering, like a reunion type thing or something, with their kids. And this little kid was showing out. I don't know how old he was, 5 or 6, I think. Was showing out and trying to be cute. And his mother trying to get on to him, and he called her a bad name. Just right in front of God and everybody. Just called her this name. And you know what happens when kids really misbehave in public? Everybody around them does what? Kind of gets quiet and kind of watches, going to see what's going to happen here, you know? So it'll be interesting. So that's probably what everybody did. I don't know what they did. But this little kid, I mean, just mouthed off something really ugly to his mama and nothing happened. Nothing happened for about 30 minutes. Kid done got over it. He thought everything was okay. The story goes, all of a sudden, the mother comes like a bull out of the kitchen, grabs this kid up. I mean, it's minutes later. You know, like I say, this is maybe not a parenting class, but minutes later grabs him up and just wears this kid out in front of everybody. Kid done forgot about it. Almost. Have you ever sinned and nobody ever found out? You have. You have. I have too. I've sinned against God. And it looks to me like God did nothing about it. I've done the same sin again and again. God did nothing about it. You know, that is a horribly dangerous place to be. Because you can very easily, very quickly, before you know it, you're in a position where you think, I can get by with it this 98th time because I've gotten by with it the 97 times before. That's a foolish place to be. It's a foolish way to think that I can sin against God and He's not going to do anything. God says, you thought I was okay with that. You thought I was altogether like you. But I will rebuke you. And I will set things in order before your eyes. There are a couple of verses in this chapter that answers this question for us. How should the guilty face this kind of judge? How should the guilty person, who is the guilty person? It's not just this wicked, although it includes him. But it's the saints who have tried to bargain their sins away with God. It's anybody. It is everybody. How should we, as guilty people, face this kind of judge? A judge like no other. Let me tell you how you face it. Your only hope is to face him honestly and humbly. No bargaining, nothing. Saying, God, help me. You remember the account in the New Testament of the, who was it, the publican and the Pharisee who went to the temple to pray? And the sinner said, God, he bowed his head, beat his breast, said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. That is your only hope. It is my only hope. Let's pray. Father, help us to just remember the judge that you are. God, help us to remember that you are not like us. You are not like some earthly judge that we might can fool, we might can deceive, we might can talk into something. You're not like our father or our mother. You are a righteous judge. Altogether righteous, altogether holy. God, would you burn that into my mind? Burn that truth into my forehead, into my hands. God, may I never forget it. May it ever always be before my conscious mind. Amen.